All righty. Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Monday edition, and it's 12:13, so we got to jump right into it. We don't have a lot of time. Karis Husted is here, and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno, the Inno. Can I just say boys? Because
you could say guys.
The Inno family.
I think that's, yeah.
Guys is better for you? Okay. I mean, I like to call you guys, when Flanagan's here, the Inno boys, but the Inno guys are here, but Karis is classing up the joint today. And how patient is she? Because Dahlke just moved into a house, and you and I have been talking about gutters and all of that stuff, and she's just, you know, very amiable, taking it all in.
I know. It's very boring stuff to anybody who doesn't have a home, but to me, it's like it's all-consuming. It's right. Everything I think about.
And for you local or loyal WGN listeners, I just introduced Dahlke to Lou Manfredini, so he'll be a regular now on Saturday mornings.
7 to 10, I'm on.
7 to 10. All right, you know, I was talking to my wife, Sharon, yesterday. It was a beautiful day. We're out in the yard doing all kinds of yard work, and I said, good golly, if I could just get to Pittsburgh in an hour, I would go.
Yeah, well, you know what? In the next 5 years, that might actually be a reality.
How can that be?
So Hyperloop One is the company who's kind of behind this. They're a startup in California. And basically, they have taken on the very ambitious task of trying to develop these tubular transportation systems across the U.S. It was an idea that sort of was born by Elon Musk in 2013. And this company, separate from Elon, developed in 2014. And they just released about a dozen finalists who are going to be providing these tubular transportation networks across the U.S. These tube systems go about 750 miles an hour, and okay. One system is in the Midwest here, the Midwest Hyperloop team. They are proposing a route from Chicago to Pittsburgh, stops in Columbus on the way, but you can get from Chicago to Pittsburgh in 47 minutes.
So with a stop in Columbus?
Right.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Because I think I'd more likely to go to Columbus maybe than Pittsburgh. I don't know.
I think 29 minutes from Chicago to Columbus. So
why are they, when they choose these routes, are they choosing these routes because of the market value or because of the infrastructure sort of, you know, it fits? It's something we could do.
So basically what we've gotten down to here are a handful of finalists from over 2,000 people who applied. So we've whittled this down from different companies and different routes, and this is the Midwest team. So the Midwest team proposed this route. So basically, it's the team behind it.
Okay.
Yeah, the infrastructure, the funding. And so basically, what they're going to do is eventually get down to three to kind of start with, and then sort of back those three routes.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really interesting, though, because like we were talking a little bit about the routes and how they would choose these. And to me, it feels like a lot of the routes they chose, which included like Silicon Valley to LA and Chicago to Pittsburgh, it's sort of like very well-traveled routes. And I kind of wonder what would it be like if you could get from Silicon Valley to North Dakota in 20 minutes? Like, how would that change like the middle of the country?
Let's create a destination, right? Somewhere no one goes.
Exactly. I mean, and I think that the real utility will be once we get all of these connected, right? I mean, three Hyperloops in the next 5 years will be nice for a handful of folks. But what we really want to see is these sort of like super fast transportation systems that connect everybody across
the
US.
Okay, so but is this really going to happen?
Well, that's the big question. Yeah. They're saying 5 years, but there are so many challenges ahead. I mean, technical challenges. You're talking about putting pods in tubes and rocketing them across the country. I mean, that's a very complicated thing to do. There was actually a U of I team that had they were in a pod competition by SpaceX for these Hyperloop technologies, and out of 20 teams that created a pod, only two were able to actually get them working in the tube system, and that's just early tests. So it's a big technical
and you
challenge.
Don't want to be Karis in the pod that doesn't work.
No.
As you can imagine, there are some extreme regulations that come with this and a lot of government approval that's going to be needed to get these things really off the ground.
But very cool. I mean, and all kidding aside, why not? If you can get to Pittsburgh in an hour, you can go to Pittsburgh for dinner. Why? I mean,
it's a commute. Yeah,
it's a commute. It's less than a commute, really. That's pretty cool. Okay, Frentl is a story Karis Husted has written about, and this is the idea that this is a startup where you can rent out the stuff. Again, this weekend in the garage, looking at a lot of stuff we haven't used for years and years. So we can rent that out to other people?
Right. So, yeah, the idea is that there are a lot of marketplaces out there for you to buy and sell your stuff. But a lot of them can be a little bit sketchy. You know, it's Craigslist. It's things like you're not super comfortable with, or it's people you don't know or people who are far away. So basically, this U of I alum created a peer-to-peer rental marketplace so people can upload any of their stuff onto this platform, and then people can look and see what the rental price would be per day, how long you can rent it for, and you can rent anything from, you know, a parking space to speakers to camera equipment. So it's trying to bring more transparency and accountability.
Is he up and running? How's he doing?
Yeah, so they just launched in February. Still pretty early. They have, I think, like 20 listings, like 10 have actually gone through, but they're targeting college campuses because kids need things like camera right, equipment, yeah. And, you know, they want to make some extra stuff, and maybe they don't want to drive Uber, or, you know, do one of the other gig economy things. So looking at college campuses and the freelance community.
That's Kyrus Husted and Jim Dahlke here as well from Chicago Inno. They are the Inno fellas. No, guys. The Inno
humans.
The Inno humans. We'll take a quick break, get back at it. And I want to talk about this Codeverse story, too, because it keeps coming up. It keeps being sort of presented to me. All right, it's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Kyrus Husted and Jim Dahlke are here. They are writers for Chicago Inno and come by usually every other week or every week, I guess I should say. Will Flanagan, who is your boss, is in Boston this week, right?
Yep, doing a little business out there.
So he's probably not listening. Anything you want to say about Will while he's...
Oh, man, I don't even know if we have enough time to really get into it.
I'll just pick one really good thing. Okay, so I was telling you guys off the air, you know, I have regular guests who come on from week to week, and this the couple behind Codeverse, Katie Lynch and Craig Hewlett, this story keeps coming up. People keep presenting it to me, and I do think I talked about it briefly last week, but... tell me about why this is such a big deal. I mean, everyone's writing about it.
Well, I think what sort of generates interest in tech circles is one, when serial entrepreneurs, so people who have been in tech and in startups who have had success here are doing something new, and then when they're tackling like a really big problem. And that's exactly what Codeverse is. Codeverse is a husband and wife team who have been doing their own thing in startups for a long time, have had some success here in the Chicago tech scene, and now they're on to a totally new venture in Codeverse, which is trying to teach a billion kids to code.
A billion kids.
So who knows if they'll get to a billion, but it's a really interesting idea in the age group that they're looking at.
Well, so their idea is that if you're 15, 12 to 15, you've got this in a classroom or something, right? They're going younger.
Or you're more likely to, right? So in high school, I mean, you're more likely to come in contact with classes and teachers and other folks who are going to sort of instill some of these early coding technologies and practices. What they're aiming for is from 6 to 12. So they're looking at really young kids, and they've developed their own coding language that's sort of really instilling the early building blocks to someone learning how to code.
And is this like a jujitsu class on Saturday morning? You show up, or is it, it's not a curriculum in schools, right?
So it would be in addition to your traditional school. So it's after school, summer school, weekends. And really what it is it's not only an online platform, but they are building what they're calling hackable classrooms. So they're building entire classrooms where you can program everything from the lights to robots to drones to TV screens.
And they're starting here. And they want to get to a billion. I mean, they're saying a billion kids, but they're starting here in Chicago, and they really want to expand it, make it nationwide.
Want to put brick and mortar classrooms in every major metropolitan.
Why not?
US
you
in
know,
the next
I mean,
5 years.
I mean, parents are so eager to sign their kids up for classes. I joked about jujitsu, but I mean, why not do something like this that's going to really. Could have an impact on them.
Yeah, well, I think that too, you know, we're seeing coding is going to become like a skill like reading or math that people kids just have to start off right away. And you see it in high school already. You know, CPS has that as a graduation requirement now, but you don't see as much for the really young kids. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what a difference it makes when someone starts coding at age 6.
It's an exciting idea. All right, so I talked to Bill and Wendy in Crosstalk before the show about whether or not you, for some reason, the idea of flying on an electric plane bothers me a little bit. And as Bill said, you have to have a really long cord because he's a comedian. but there is this movement, right, toward moving toward not jet-fueled planes, but electric planes. Kyrus, you wrote about that.
Right, yeah. So a University of Illinois professor is one of the co-founders of an electric aircraft startup called Zunum Aero. So basically what this would be right now, it's going to be hybrid electric airplanes. So it would kind of run like a Prius, you know, a little bit of both.
right, but, so you're in the air and all of a sudden it goes silent? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, that would be a little scary. Right. But that's kind of what they're working towards. So what people have been doing in the battery space is trying to make these batteries that have dense enough power that they can fuel longer and longer.
Right, right.
whether it's cars driving or flights. And so what this startup is really looking at is connecting regional flights. So you could go from, say, Peoria to Rockford, or looking at those airports that aren't served by the larger hubs.
But they want to go 1,000 miles, right? They have a goal of 1,000 miles?
Up to 1,000 miles. Right now, it's going to be a little bit shorter to start off with. They're aiming for early 2020s for the initial flights, but eventually they'd like to get up to over 1,000 miles.
And again, going back to the Hyperloop, is this something that's real? Is this something that we're going to fly in?
Well, these are, startups that have, very, very tenured, smart folks who are behind this and funding behind it as well.
So you're saying smarter than the three of us sitting in here?
What they're going to have to do is convince the people like the three of us to try an airplane startup.
Right.
I mean, I think everybody's willing to try the next app or try the next food delivery company to give me some food. But I don't know if I'm totally ready yet to try an airplane startup, as bad as current airline service is. It's a big leap that people are going to have to make.
So you're more willing to experiment with Grubhub than you would be with Fly Me Around the World.
Then get into an airplane at 32,000 feet with a startup? Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
How about 22,000?
I think food poisoning kills more people than airplanes do.
That's a great point.
That's just a fact, and we don't have time for that really here. Kars Husted, Jim Dahlke from Chicago. Great to see you guys. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
We are going to talk about, we're going to talk about the H-1B visas coming up with the CEO of Envoy. I know you guys, must be familiar with that. Yeah. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and it's a good day not to be Oscar Munoz, the CEO of United Airlines, I suspect. Or maybe it is a good day to be Oscar Munoz. I mean, why not? Oscar has had a second lease on life with his heart transplant. He's, I think, by most accounts, a pretty good leader, but it is a rough day at United Airlines today. Okay, so, a while ago we had Dick Burke on, and he's the CEO of Envoy, and it's this company that, well, I'm going to just say, I could be through you, correct me, Dick, but it's a company that helps companies in the U.S. bring workers in, or also helps companies in the U.S. send workers overseas, right? You facilitate sort of the exchange from one country to another.
That's exactly right, Steve. Thank you. And the third thing we do is we make it very easy for companies to keep track of these workers and to make certain they're compliant in a very quickly evolving regulatory landscape, stay compliant with what's happening, make certain that these people and the companies themselves are acting in accord with the rules.
Okay, so the last time you were on, I don't remember exactly what we talked about, but I'm sure it was very entertaining and everyone was informed and they left enlightened.
Yeah.
But I said you're going to come back, and I said you're going to come back about this issue, these H-1B visas. Now, these are the visas that companies, is it companies apply for them or individuals apply
companies,
for them?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me back. H-1Bs are, it's a visa which allows you to be here on a temporary basis, 3 years in this instance.
The idea is that you've got a skill that we're wanting for.
It's called a specialty occupation, in fact. And the theory is we cannot fill that regularly with U.S. citizens, so let's bring in the best and the brightest. And the applications are done annually, and they just were due to the USCIS last week, and the lottery was already filled. So it'll be interesting to see.
How many days did it take?
This year, about 3 or 4 days only.
Until they had more than enough.
More than enough. And more than last year, about 2 out of every 3 were turned away.
And so these are IT workers, or who are they?
They are high-skilled workers, frequently in the STEM fields, computer programming, software development, database developers, hardware engineers, et cetera.
So the flare, the red flag that came up with me when the application process started was kind of a warning from the Trump administration, and they said, hey, you U.S. businesses, we're going to be watching you. Don't be bringing people in from overseas if you've got Americans who can do the job.
That's exactly right. It was a flare consistent with Trump's campaign promises. And it was as much, interestingly, for Indian companies as American companies, Steve. He's basically saying, hey, listen, there is the H program is designed to augment where we have a labor shortage. Do not use this program to displace American workers who are capable. And the complexity has been there have been a few instances where companies have done that. The challenge, though, is that by focusing on these one or two exceptions, which probably number in the thousands of impacted employees, mm-hmm. you're missing out on the rest of the story, which impacts hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of jobs here in the United States that cannot get filled.
We should be bringing more people in.
What our customers are telling us is, hey, we have needs that cannot be filled. The U.S. Department of Labor has come out and said 1.4 million unfilled software development jobs by 2020. So Trump administration is right. Let's address perceived abuses of the program, but let's not lose sight of the greater issue of the skills shortage in
the
United States.
And what's the abuse? The abuse is that these companies are bringing workers in and paying them less than they would pay my kid?
That is what the allegation is. Now, there are some safeguards built into the H-1B program which are taken advantage of or ignored. So what Trump is saying is, hey, we're gonna crack down on these perceived abuses. And what our customers are saying to us is, fine, let's make sure the program is operated correctly. But also, let's not lose sight of this need that we have to hire unskilled workers. We did a big survey just 2 months ago while I was in the first time. 60% of employers say they want to bring in more people.
Right.
They want
That's
to take
was, yeah.
more advantage of global opportunities. And about 30% of them are saying, we're going to hold off on projects because we can't get our jobs filled.
Okay, so if you're running a company and you have access to a pool of potential employees that will work for B, mm-hmm. and then you have a potential pool of employees who will work for 2B or twice as much mm-hmm. B, right? I mean, do you have an obligation to pay the people more if they're American?
You have an obligation to...
You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. And the interesting thing is the H program does not guarantee lower wages. You look at U.S. operating companies that
they're doing pretty well.
They're doing very well, yeah. But they're also, Steve, paying Microsoft, Oracle, Amazon. They're paying $120,000, $130,000 on average for these jobs. So the instances of abuse are relatively few and far between, and that they suck up a lot of the oxygen
sure,
in the room,
right.
ignoring this bigger problem.
So is he making
shortage.
Noise? Is this more about noise than, I understand why the president would do it. I mean, it serves a lot of interest to say such a thing.
Consistent with his campaign.
Right. But maybe not follow up on it so much.
Well, he's trying to follow up on it, but he's following up in ways that he can do it. Certain reform issues will require congressional approval. There are things he can do on the edges through executive order and through governmental regulation, and that's what he's been doing so far. So he came out last week and said, if you hire a lot of H-1B employees, we're going to crack down. We're going to take an extra hard look at you. We're going to, in addition, say that if you are trying to bring people in on this very low-skilled computer job, we're going to make sure they're qualified. So he's playing around the edges,
right.
But it's causing uncertainty amongst our customers and others. We're saying, hey, wait a second, what does this mean?
So are there jobs being left wanting?
Yeah, very much so. Adecco says 2.4 million unfilled jobs by the end of next year. The U.S. government itself, 1.4 million unfilled STEM software development jobs.
Okay, so if you're the president,
yep.
right, you want America first. You want yep. Americans to work. You also want the economy to hum along.
And I want to.
So you don't want these companies to be operating at less than full potential because they can't get these people. And what's the solution?
Well, nor do I want the jobs to go overseas, which they easily can.
And that's what's happening, isn't it?
Exactly right.
Yeah, okay.
And I also, by the way, want the GDP to grow at 4%, like I said in my campaign. And you can't have all of it. So what our customers are saying, this is we believe is appropriate. To the extent there are abuses in the H-1B program, address them. But don't ignore the fact that we have a skill shortage, that immigrants have been found by virtually every study to grow the economy, and that if we're serious about trying to get to higher GDP growth, we need these jobs here filled in the United States.
Okay, so the last thing then, tie together, is there a connection to the partial immigration ban and these H-1B visas?
Yes, in that they are attempts, I'd argue, by the present administration to show we're getting tough on foreigners, we're getting tough on things that non-American influences in the United States.
Dick Burke, the CEO of Envoy. It's great to see you again.
Thank you for having me
again. I'm going to make you come back
sometime. I'd love
sometime.
It. I'd love it. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Very happy to say hello to Teresa Mintel, the CEO and president of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Okay, so, well, we could talk in general, but let's talk a little specific first about this event coming up, the James Tyree event on, is it Wednesday?
It's Wednesday.
I promise I'll be there.
Yeah, you're. I'm seeing. I hope
no,
you will
no,
be.
No, okay. But yeah, so it's Wednesday, and it's sort of like a Shark Tank event, right, for these companies to they're in line to win or earn $50,000.
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Well, this is really a great event. It's probably my favorite event of the year, and it is the James Tyree Emerging Business Leadership Award. And what we do is we open up an application process for the entire region for small business entrepreneurs who are also civically minded.
And tell me about that, because I keep reading that. So there's a little bit more than just making money or doing a good business. They're doing good too.
That's correct. And the reason why that is so important is because James Tyree, after whom the award is named, actually was an incredibly successful businessman, but really put philanthropic activity first and foremost. And so that's why we make that such a key
piece. And James was at Mesro?
That's right. He was the president and CEO of Mesro Financial, also a chairman of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce.
I didn't realize that. He was at the Chicagoland Chamber as well. And for a time at the Sun-Times, right? Didn't he have
had an interest in Sun-Times as well, yes.
And, sadly died very young. And
yes.
So you remember him this way.
We do, and this will be our sixth year of doing this.
And so tell me about some of the contestants.
Oh, boy, this is a lot of fun because it really it runs the gamut. So we've got food and beverage. We have retail. We have consumer products. We have IT. We have education people. I mean, you name it, it really represents the business ecosystem in
so
Chicago.
So what do they have in common? And is it the good works thing that they share? Or
Well, they're entrepreneurs. So the first thing they have in common is that they don't take no for an answer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they are very, very motivated to be successful and to create jobs. But then the added benefit is that they do have this philanthropic side.
Okay. So there are how many semifinals?
We're down to 12.
Down to 12.
Yes.
And then on Wednesday night, they're going to make a, what, 2 or 3 minute pitch? I'm told I'm supposed to cut people off.
You are. You've got the
sure
you've got the best, most difficult job. Actually, the 12 come, and it's a whole voting process. So they make these very quick 2 minute pitches, very much like Shark Tank. And then the audience gets to vote on who advances to the final round.
And someone finds out that night if they walk away with 50 grand?
No.
Okay.
We're not quite that good.
Okay.
The final round is actually in person interviews. So we bring four in for.
I thought I was going to write like a big three by five check or something.
We'll come back and chat with you when we get closer to the end. But no, then it gets down to four, and we do in-person interviews and really drill down into what their business model is and what their civic engagement is.
So, you know, what I like about this is when I think of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, that's kind of, no offense, that sounds like a staid group, right? The Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. But and so this clearly is a nod to the fact that that's not what you are. I mean, you're looking at young up-and-comers as well to keep things healthy when it comes to the business ecosystem around here.
Absolutely. We all know that if we don't tap that younger ecosystem, then you do actually die on the vine.
Right.
And in Chicago, our large civic leaders and business leaders really do believe in the entire ecosystem, and they are really the ones who allow us to invest in these small business programs that we do.
So how are we doing in Chicagoland when it comes to businesses?
Chicago's rocking it.
Is it?
Absolutely.
Really? That's good to hear.
Corporate headquarters moving in. Unbelievable talent.
Well, let me say this. So I live in the suburbs, okay?
Killing me. It's taking my heart.
No, I live in Deerfield, and I'm sick and tired of the mayor taking people from my town and bringing them downtown, whether it's the Bulls or, you know, he played for Walgreens and all these, you know. So he's really been, you know, well, look, let's just say he's been a poacher.
Steve, you're next.
I'll be moving into a condo not too long from now.
We'd love to have you. Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe upstairs here.
Right.
No, Chicago is incredibly strong. And I have to leave that message with everybody that despite what we might read or feel, we've got an amazing city here, culture, people, transportation, corporate
leadership.
Yeah, but
we have such a lousy government infrastructure. I mean, people worry about that. Are you telling me we're okay?
You would laugh at me if I told you we were absolutely okay, but I will tell you that the city of Chicago is in a very good place. Our state needs some work, and we actually work on that very regularly with our leaders, and it's important to us. But if you want to really talk about Chicago and how strong things are, look at these 12 businesses that are trying to make it here who are applying for
and
the Tyree Award.
They're here.
Yeah, they could be anywhere. These tech guys could be out in California. Food and beverage can be anywhere on the planet. They're here in Chicago.
Teresa Mintel is the CEO and president of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. People want to go Wednesday?
Oh, it's open to the public. It's a lot of fun. It's live Shark Tank right here in Chicago. So we hope to see them.
How do they get info?
Chicagolandchamber.org.
So I'll look that up to figure out where I'm supposed to be and when.
Yes, they can be over at Mesro at 4:30, and we hope to see them all there.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to it.
We look forward to it too, Steve.